From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
A statement that we should perhaps be re-evaluating our priorities came from the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres on Monday, as he urged parties who are at war across the world to lay down their weapons in support of the bigger battle against the COVID-19 virus.
Our world faces a common enemy, COVID-19. The virus does not care about nationality or ethnicity, faction or face. It attacks all relentlessly. Meanwhile, armed conflict rages on around the world. The most vulnerable, women and children, people with disabilities, the marginalized and displaced, pay the highest price. They are also at the highest risk of suffering devastating losses from COVID-19. Let's not forget that in war-ravaged countries, health systems have collapsed. Health professionals, already few in number, have often been targeted. Refugees and others displaced by violent conflict are doubly vulnerable. The fury of the virus illustrates the folly of war. That is why today I am calling for an immediate global ceasefire in all corners of the world. It is time to put armed conflict on lockdown and focus together on the true fight of our lives. To warring parties, I say, pull back from hostilities, put aside mistrust and animosity, silence the guns, stop the artillery, end the airstrikes. This is crucial to help create corridors for life-saving aid, to open precious windows for diplomacy, to bring hope to places among the most vulnerable to COVID-19. Let us take inspiration from coalitions and dialogue slowly taking shape among rival parties in some parts to enable joint approaches to COVID-19. But we need much more. End the sickness of war and fight the disease that is ravaging our world. It starts by stopping the fighting everywhere, now. That is what our human family needs, now more than ever.
President Trump held his daily update on Monday with the Attorney General, William Barr, at his side and available for questions. We now bring you excerpts from that press conference.
Thank you for being here. America continues to mobilize every segment of our society to turn the tide in the battle against the virus. I want Americans to know that we will get through this challenge. The hardship will end. It will end soon. Normal life will return, and our economy will rebound very, very strongly. But right now, in the midst of this great national trial, Americans must remain united in purpose and focused on victory. To every single American, please know that the sacrifice you're making at this time is saving lives, many, many lives. It's very important that we totally protect our Asian American community in the United States and all around the world. They're amazing people, and the spreading of the virus is not their fault in any way, shape, or form. They're working closely with us to get rid of it. We will prevail together. It's very important. From the beginning, we have been working closely with our nation's best scientists and medical professionals, and we will continue to do so until we have defeated the virus. Our public health experts, who are terrific, are studying the variation in the disease across the country, and we will be using data to recommend new protocols to allow local economies to cautiously resume their activity at the appropriate time. We also have a large team working on what the next steps will be once the medical community gives a region the okay, meaning the okay to get going, to get back. Let's go to work. Our country wasn't built to be shut down. This is not a country that was built for this. It was not built to be shut down. My administration continues to work with Democrats and Republicans to reach an agreement on an urgent relief bill for the millions of American workers and small businesses and large businesses that were badly affected by the medical difficulty that we've had. If you had a viable business in January, we are committed to ensuring the same is true in the coming weeks. In fact, we want to make it even better than it was before, and we're doing things to help in that regard. America will again and soon be open for business, very soon, a lot sooner than 3 or 4 months that somebody was suggesting, a lot sooner. We cannot let the cure be worse than the problem itself. We're not going to let the cure be worse than the problem. At the end of the 15-day period, we'll make a decision as to which way we want to go, where we want to go, the timing. And essentially, we're referring to the timing of the opening, essentially the opening of our country, because we have it pretty well shut down in order to get rid of this invisible enemy. 2 weeks ago, we moved at record speed to pass paid sick leave and paid family medical leave and approved $8 billion, including money for the development of treatments and vaccines. And we're doing tremendous work in both on both fronts. The vaccines are coming along very quickly. Now Congress must demonstrate the same bipartisanship again and join together to pass the Senate bill as written and avoid playing any more partisan games. They have to get together and just stop with the partisan politics. And I think that's happening. I got a call a little while ago. I guess they're getting closer. It should go quickly. And it must go quickly. It's not really a choice. They don't have a choice. They have to make a deal. This should not be a time for political agendas, but rather one for focusing solely and squarely on the needs of the American people. We are going to save American workers, and we're going to save them quickly. And we're going to save our great American companies, both small and large. This was a medical problem. We are not going to let it turn into a long-lasting financial problem. Started out as a purely medical problem, and it's not going to go beyond that. We're just not going to allow that to happen. Our country was at its strongest financial point. We've never had an economy like we had just a few weeks ago, and then it got hit with something that nobody could have ever thought possible. And we are fixing it. We're fixing it quickly. And I want to just thank the American people for what they've been through and what they're doing. Our country will be stronger than ever before, and we fully anticipate that, and it won't be that long. Let me provide you with an update on critical supplies. FEMA is distributing 8 million N95 respirator masks and 13.3 million surgical masks across the country right now. Focusing on the areas with the greatest need, we've shipped 73 pallets of personal protective equipment to New York City and 36 pallets to the state of Washington. In the past 96 hours, FEMA has also received donations of approximately 6.5 million masks. We're having millions and millions of masks made as we speak, and other personal protective equipment, which we will be distributing to medical hotspots. We're focused on some of the hotspots. Across the nation, we're seeing an outpouring of creativity and innovative ideas widely shared between the federal health leaders, governors and mayors, the scientific community and members of the private sector. Really working together. Everybody's working together. I'm pleased to report that clinical trials in New York will begin existing for existing drugs that may prove effective against the virus. At my direction, the federal government is working to help obtain large quantities of chloroquine. And you can look from any standpoint tomorrow in New York. We think tomorrow pretty early, the hydroxychloroquine and the Z-Pak, I think, is a combination, probably is looking very, very good, and it's going to be distributed. We have 10,000 units going, and it'll be distributed tomorrow. It'll be available, and is now. They already have it. They're going to distribute it tomorrow morning to a lot of people in New York City and New York. We're studying it very closely, watching it very closely. You probably saw a couple of articles today came out where a gentleman, they thought he was not going to make it. He said goodbye to his family. They had given him the drug just a little while before, but he thought it was over. His family thought he was going to die. And a number of hours later, he woke up, felt good. Then he woke up again, and he felt really good. And He's in good shape, and he's very happy for this particular drug that we got approved in record-setting time. There's never been anything even close to it. And I want to thank the FDA, which has been incredible, and Dr. Hahn, Stephen Hahn, highly respected man, but they're doing everything possible to increase production and available supply of these drugs, not only this drug, but also others that are coming. Remdesivir is coming from Regeneron. A couple of others are also under study. But the one that I'm very excited about right now is the one we just mentioned. And I think there's a real chance. I mean, again, we don't know, but there's a real chance that it could have a tremendous impact. It would be a gift from God if that worked. It would be a big game changer. So we'll see. But distribution starts tomorrow morning early in New York, and I think a lot of people are going to be, hopefully they're going to be very happy with the result, but we're all going to be watching closely. It's something we have to try. It's been very, very successful on malaria, very, very successful. And countries with malaria have had a interesting thing happen. They take this particular drug. It's a very powerful drug. And there is very little semblance of the virus in those countries. And there are those that say because this drug is very prevalent because of the malaria. So we'll see what happens. I'm also announcing that we're postponing the deadline for compliance with real ID requirements at a time when we're asking Americans to maintain social distancing. We do want to require people to go with their local DMV. We will be announcing the new deadline very soon. It's going to be announced in a very short moment. Overnight, we successfully brought home 103 American citizens after they had been stranded for 10 days in Brazil following a cruise. We want to thank the Brazilian government and their great president. Most of those returned were senior citizens. My administration, in cooperation with Governor Greg Abbott of Texas and the private sector, coordinated their safe return to the United States. So thank you to Governor Abbott. Terrific governor, terrific man. Earlier today, I signed an executive order invoking presidential authority under Section 4512 of the Defense Production Act to prohibit the hoarding of vital medical equipment and supplies, such as hand sanitizers, face masks, and personal protective equipment. We have a lot of face masks, a lot of equipment is coming in, and we have some people hoarding, and Attorney General Barr is going to be speaking about that in a second. We want to prevent price gouging, and critical health and medical resources are going to be protected in every form. Under this directive, the Secretary of Health and Human Services is authorized to designate essential health and medical supplies as scarce. So he'll designate certain supplies and medical elements as scarce, and that means it will be a crime to stockpile these items in excessive quantities, which is happening to a relatively small degree, we think, but nevertheless, it's happening. We can't let it happen. And we can't let them resell them at excessive prices, which some people are doing. Very simply, we will not allow anyone to exploit the suffering of American citizens for their own profit. So we're going to be watching that with our great Attorney General very closely. The Department of Justice will be aggressively prosecuting fraudulent schemes related to the pandemic. Yesterday, federal prosecutors took action in their first case, shutting down a website selling a totally fake vaccine, if you can believe that one. As president, I will always fight to protect Americans from being exploited. Thankfully, all throughout the country, we're witnessing extraordinary acts of compassion, benevolence, and unity. Construction companies are donating masks by the hundreds of thousands. Manufacturing workers are transforming their assembly lines. Citizens are volunteering to deliver food and medicine to the elderly. We're truly seeing America at its best. We're really seeing things that people never thought even could happen. Frankly, we never thought this could happen. But the way most Americans are are working toward getting it solved and just doing what they have to do to make this go away has been incredible. It's been incredible. I want to take a moment to thank the everyday heroes who are making our vast effort against the virus possible. And thank you to the healthcare workers and the first responders. These are very brave people. Thanks also to the hardworking men and women of Federal Express, UPS, United States Postal Service, and the truckers who are maintaining our supply chains and supply lines. We thank you very much. Great job. We also want to give our regards and thanks to everyone at our grocery stores working the night shift so that shelves can be restocked, and the restaurant workers and delivery drivers keeping our families fed. So many of these restaurants, it's incredible. They're doing service where people come and they pick it up. Delivery, I mean, it's been incredible what they've been doing. Totally different business than they were in, other than they cook food. Other than that, it's like a totally different business. Most of all, I want to thank the American people for rising to the challenge and showing incredible courage, determination, patience, grace, and grit. From New York to Seattle and everywhere in between, your acts of selflessness and sacrifice and ingenuity are a powerful testament to the American character. It's really being shown. It's really showing up at a level that people are really respecting. All over the world, they're respecting. And the world has problems. We're at 148 countries now. 148 countries are affected by the invisible scourge. And all of the uplifting reflections of the American spirit are out there for everyone to see. Together, we will care for our fellow citizens, and we will win this war, and we'll win it much sooner than people think. And we'll be back in business as a country pretty soon. You'll be hearing about that also pretty soon. Now I'd like to ask Attorney General Bill Barr to say a few words, and we'll take questions in a little while. Thank you.
Let me start by thanking you, Mr. President, Mr. Vice President, for your decisive leadership in this unprecedented battle to save American lives. At the Department of Justice, we're working hard to protect the health and safety of our personnel while at the same time keeping our enforcement efforts at full throttle. So I'd like to thank all of my colleagues in law enforcement, not just those at the federal level, but of all our state and local partners, the police officers, the sheriff's deputies who are protecting and serving their communities, often at great risk to themselves. What I'd like to do here is start with a few remarks about the order that the President mentioned to ensure the availability of critical medical and health supplies from hoarding and price gouging. On March 18th, the President issued Executive Order 13909, invoking the Defense Production Act, with respect to the health and medical resources needed to respond to the spread of COVID-19, including PPE and ventilators. We have started to see some evidence of potential hoarding and price gouging. And so earlier today, the President signed a second executive order providing the authority to address, if it becomes necessary, hoarding that threatens the supply of those necessary health and medical resources. Under Section 102 of the Defense Production Act, the President is authorized to prohibit the hoarding of needed resources by designating those materials as scarce or as materials whose supply would be threatened by persons accumulating excessive amounts. Once specific materials are so designated, persons are prohibited from accumulating those items in excess of reasonable personal or business needs, or for the purpose of selling them in excess of prevailing market prices. It is a crime to engage in prohibited activity. In today's executive order, the President is delegating to the Secretary of HHS this authority to protect against hoarding by designating these critical items. Now, no items have been designated yet, and the Department of Justice is going to be working with HHS to identify cases where hoarding may be impeding the supply of health and medical resources needed to respond to the COVID-19 pandemic. Today, we convened our first task force meeting, a national task force, that will be working on these supply chain issues and specifically on the problem of hoarding and price gouging. And we are designating in each of our 93 United States Attorney's offices a lead prosecutor who will be responsible in that district for pursuing these cases. I also want to say that we have not waited for this order to be signed. As we have received evidence recently, we have already initiated investigations of activities that are disrupting the supply chain and suggestive of hoarding. I want to stress that we're not talking about consumers or businesses stockpiling supplies for their own operations. We're talking about people hoarding these goods and materials on an industrial scale for the purpose of manipulating the market and ultimately deriving windfall profits. If you have a big supply of toilet paper in your house, this is not something you have to worry about. But if you are sitting on a warehouse with masks, surgical masks, you will be hearing a knock on your door. So with that, Mr. President, I'll turn it back to you.
Thank you very much. Deborah, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. To start, I want to really thank all the ministers of health around the world who have been sending us their data despite the fight that they're in themselves, particularly our European colleagues. They continue to send us primarily their mortality data, which is really very critical because when you're in the midst of this level of fight that many of the European countries are, following mortality data will give you the best insight right now on how the epidemic is proceeding in those countries because they really can't be testing at the level to really understand the depth and breadth of their new cases. In the mortality data that has been provided to us, there has been no child under 15 that has succumbed to the virus in Europe. There was the one 14-year-old in China. So we still see that there is less severity in children. And so that should be reassuring to the moms and dads out there. To Generation Z and to my millennial colleagues who have been really at the forefront of many of these responses, less than 1% of all the mortality is less than 50. And so this is, I think, also a very important point that doesn't mean that individuals won't have severe disease. So still 99% of all the mortality coming out of Europe in general is over 50 and pre-existing conditions. The pre-existing condition piece still holds in Italy, with the majority of the mortality having three or more pre-existing conditions. I think this is reassuring to all of us, but it doesn't change the need to continue to protect the elderly. And in order to protect the elderly, we all need to continue to do the president's directives and guidance for the next week of the 15-day challenge. Finally, I wanted to really close by thanking the laboratory personnel that have been at the front lines. 250,000 tests have been run in the last 7 days. This happened because these large commercial laboratories are doing round-the-clock runs. And remember, all of them are being exposed to the virus in the same way from the swabs. Yet tirelessly, they have worked on and on to get those results available. They are still getting more tests than they can run per day. That's because we were primarily expanded into what we call the Roche high-throughput Tricor machine. Those results have been getting to the clients, and we've asked them to prioritize hospitalized patients. There was a breakthrough today, and I think you'll see this from the FDA. For all of those of you who are waiting for self-swabbing options, those are going to be available sometime this week to be able to individuals do their own tests. That said, remember, these platforms are keeping up with those who need to be diagnosed in the hospitals and all those who come to the emergency room quite ill so that hospital beds can be freed up for those that don't have COVID. So that will be critical, that if you don't need a test and if it doesn't change your clinical course, do not come in to be tested. And I think that mortality data that I gave you should be very reassuring to all of you. Finally, to conclude, New York City. The New York metro area of New Jersey, New York City, and parts of Long Island have an attack rate close to 1 in 1,000. This is 5 times what the other areas are seeing. Through the high-throughput lab investigations, we're finding that 28% of the submitted specimens are positive from that area, where it's less than 8% in the rest of the country. So to all of my friends and colleagues in New York, this is the group that needs to absolutely social distance and self-isolate at this time. Clearly, the virus had been circulating there for a number of weeks to have this level of penetrance into the general community.
Thank you very much, Deborah.
Thank you, Mr. President. The White House Coronavirus Task Force met today, but we also convened, at the President's direction, a conference call with the nation's governors. And we focused on efforts at mitigation, at testing, and supplies. We discussed the President's recent approval of disaster declarations for Washington and California and New York. But we also assured governors who've submitted major disaster declarations that we will be reviewing them in an expeditious manner to ensure the full resources the federal government are brought to bear. The President wanted us to make it clear that the federal government will do whatever it takes to support an effort that is locally executed, state managed, and federally supported. We reiterated that to our governors today, listened to them about their specific needs, and frankly, made it clear to them that while the President has published at coronavirus.gov the 15 days to slow the spread for every American, and millions of Americans are addressing these common sense guidelines to prevent the spread of the coronavirus in the days ahead, we made it clear to the governors that this President and this administration fully supports decisions that governors are making in communities and states that are particularly impacted by the spread of the coronavirus, and we are grateful for their efforts. We also spoke to the governors about the importance of the legislation that is currently being negotiated on Capitol Hill and asked them to encourage members of the House and the Senate to move very quickly. The bill that is currently being negotiated, the President said that he believes will be resolved soon, and we're encouraged by it. We'll speed direct payments to families. The average family of four will receive $3,000 directly. There'll be payroll subsidies for small businesses around America to keep people on the payroll while they might be required to stay home, unemployment insurance benefits, assistance to hospitals and major industries. And we continue to urge the Congress to act and ask the governors to engage their delegations. On the subject of testing, we reiterated our thanks to states across the country that are rapidly expanding testing at drive-through sites and at community sites. As Dr. Birx just reflected, because of the unprecedented public and private partnership that the President initiated with our commercial labs, we stand here today with 313,000 tests having been completed, with the test results delivered to Americans, and still somewhat more than 41,000 have contracted coronavirus. But this state-run effort is continuing to receive the full support of our team at FEMA and at the U.S. Public Health Service. We're deploying personnel, we're deploying resources, and testing is literally expanding around the country by the hour. As Dr. Birx also mentioned, the FDA has been in the process of reviewing less invasive methods of testing. The President and I both reflected on the fact that we have been tested, and we've been working with the FDA to make it possible for self-collected nasal swabs.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.